I love Chicago. I was born here, and I hate what it's become. The buildings on the lakefront and the sweep of the skyscraper skyline are beautiful. But I think of the neighborhoods and the people. The neighborhood people. The ones who don't live in the skyscrapers and work in the C-suites. And the small businesses that give the city by the lake its character. Or did. But they've been crushed. Crushed by corrupt politics and the government hammer. And they've been treated like fools, idiots, chumbalones. Joe Ferguson loves Chicago, too. He just stepped down after a long run as the pit bull inspector general of the city of Chicago, for the people of Chicago, pointing out the systemic, don't you like that word, systemic? The systemic waste and corruption. And after the George Floyd riots and more riots and the looting and the destruction of the Loop and Michigan Avenue and looting, with Mayor Lori Lightfoot caving to the destructors, just like liberal Democratic mayors did in most every big city, including smaller towns like Kenosha, Ferguson issued a report placing the blame where it belonged. On City Hall and top police command. When he left after years of doing his job and pointing out that systemic waste and corruption, the newspapers hailed him. Even Mayor Lori Lightfoot hailed and thanked him, and she wrote an op-ed in the paper praising him. But then she unmasked herself. She called him a fly speck on her rearview mirror. Our friend WGN-TV's Ben Bradley noted it. He tweeted, Inspector General Joe Ferguson has served the city admirably. He exposed corruption and wrongdoing and was frequently the lone voice willing to speak publicly about systemic problems. So why does the mayor find it necessary to kick someone on the way out? Why, Ben? Because that's who she is. She's a one-eyed Jack, and we've seen the other side of her face. And the last I saw of her, she was in Washington yucking it up with her BFF, Vice President Giggles, Kamala Harris, eager to spend all that infrastructure federal cash. And I wonder, how did I get her so wrong? How did I not see that she was Trump in pantsuits, that she'd reverse course, flip 180 degrees, endorse Kim Fox for re-election? Kim Fox, Lori? With all the violent crime? But yeah, you did. You endorsed her. Joe Ferguson liked her too. So did many in the city. Maybe you did. Once. Does Ferguson know how we got Lightfoot wrong? We'll ask him. Because today we're going to talk at length with Joe Ferguson about Lightfoot, the city, its politics, and the desperate need for grown-ups to take control. Jeff Carlin is here. He's always here. Friend of cats, too, Pie Baker, and the best radio producer around. Jeff is executive producer at WGN Radio, and if you like what you hear here, Jeff helps make it so. We're always going to keep this podcast free, but we're looking for advertisers to pay our bills. Restaurants, businesses, whoever wants to join us on this great adventure. And if you're interested, you can reach out to Jeff at JP Carlin. And I'm John Cass, husband, father, columnist at your favorite destination for independent commentary and analysis, johncassnews.com. The columns are free for now, but only for now, because I don't have an income since I've left the paper. And soon, I think, a subscription to johncassnews.com will make a hell of a Christmas gift. Better than a card. Better than aftershave. I'm just saying. And you, just look around you. Where are you on this boulevard of broken dreams, with politicians and their armies standing on it like they own it, ready to carve it up in the ward remap fight? Helped along by media that carries their water, and everybody telling you to pay up or step down off the corner. Hey, you don't step off. You don't step down. This is your street. This is the No Trump Alone Zone. And this is the Chicago Way on WGN Plus.
Look, the Chicago Way is a deep cultural phenomenon.
It's the Chicago Way.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man. There was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand. Defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso. In a tower by the river. Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago Way.
As I mentioned, our next guest is Joe Ferguson, longtime former Inspector General of the City of Chicago. When he left the city, Lori Lightfoot and many of the newspapers did glowing editorials about his work and his fine work. He was the pit bull watchdog for the people of the city of Chicago. And then after Lori Lightfoot wrote her glowing document in the Chicago Tribune, or as I call it, the paper, she said a funny thing. She was asked about Mr. Ferguson, and she said, "He's just a speck on the rearview mirror." And I thought, that is typical of her. Of the candidate that I supported, and I think Joe supported her too once. Joe, as welcome to the Chicago Way, but let me ask you, where did we go wrong on Lori Lightfoot?
In this election, and thank you. Thanks for having me here, and thanks to Jeff. In our selection of a mayor, where did we go wrong?
Yeah, because I was all in supporting her after she was, you know, when it was Lightfoot versus Preckwinkle. I wanted Vallis, but then she raised, and so I supported her enthusiastically and defended her. What happened to her?
We collectively, I think, went wrong or got sort of misdirected in two ways. First off, narrative is so important. John Cass, you know how important narrative is, and you hammer home a narrative, and you've been doing it for decades, and it's really important. And the narrative that we got caught up in is sort of the counterpoint to the prevailing narrative of Chicago. It's corrupt and its leaders are corrupt. And so given her background or an aspect of her background, we had a former federal prosecutor at a moment who was really faltering in the polls, suddenly catching fire because Ed Burke emerged in the news. Tony Preckwinkle could not escape the taint of a fairly limited Ed Burke connection, but there were a couple of them, and the narrative started to drive things. And you give her credit; she drove that narrative. She saw that opportunity, she saw that lane, and she drove to it. The other thing that I think we missed the call on is her narrative, the narrative that she put forward, that she was not a politician, that she was not from within the system, and that to the contrary, she was actually a true reformer. And there were some touchstones to say that there was basis, you know, there was basis to say that she was a reformer, and we can talk about a couple of those things, but she's not a reformer. She's never been a reformer. She's been a transactional reformer. I first encountered Lori Lightfoot when I was clerking for a federal district judge in 1992. And that judge was on a three-judge panel hearing a challenge to the federal congressional remap. Mm-hmm. And the judge that I worked for had the lead and was going to write the opinion. And I was the clerk that was assigned to it. And I was relatively young, certainly compared to now. And I'm in the courtroom watching sort of the first big gathering of lawyers. And this is 1992, old Chicago. This was a bunch of old white guys who were the lawyers for clout before we even called it clout, who were lawyers for the combine before you even called it the combine. Everybody, old white guy from sort of an institutional perspective, except for one person, this diminutive African-American young woman who was walking about the room, interacting with folks. She was working for Mayor Brown and specifically for Ty Fainer, who is the lead lawyer for the plaintiffs, the Republican Party of Illinois. That is Lori Lightfoot. That's a touchstone that was never accounted for as we got caught up in sort of an intersectional sort of identity politics, progressive reform with the counter narrative of this person having done something that would be the true counterpoint to the prevailing machine and clout system. She's from within that system and has worked it quite well in many respects. But we missed the focusing on that part of things, that she was a Daley appointee, that she moved from OPS, which was part of the police department at the time, to OEMC as general counsel for Ron Huberman, one of Mayor Daley's favorites, and then moved over to procurement services at the request of Mary Dempsey, yeah, who was parachuted in by Rich Daley when there was a huge procurement contracting scandal. She's a Daley administration person, and she's been connected up to power her whole career. We missed that as a matter of emphasis because we were doing a beatdown of Tony Preckwinkle because it was an anti-corruption moment.
Yeah, we beat down her. Tony Preckwinkle with the cudgel, the pink pin-suited cudgel of Ed Burke. But now we reap the benefits of that misperception, I think.
Yeah.
We're talking to Joe Ferguson, and it's our great pleasure to have him on. When we're talking to him, the closing arguments of the Kyle Rittenhouse case are going on. And let me rephrase, governors have brought up National Guard. Some in the media are, you know, screaming hysterically about potential violence if the case doesn't go their way, which I assume means if they don't get, you know, conviction of this teenager. And when we're talking about potential violence in the streets, and I hope there is none, and I don't think there will be, but it's a specter out there. I can't think of anyone better to talk to than Joe Ferguson, who studied the George Floyd riots exhaustively and the city's response to the George Floyd riots, not only the initial riots and the savaging and destruction on Michigan Avenue, but subsequent waves of looting that Lori Lightfoot seemed incapable of stopping, and changed the way she's looked in the city today. What did many people have not, unfortunately, read that report. You can find it. It's out on the internet. You should read it. Not only the summary, which was very well written, but also the report itself. But for our audience here, I think many of them have read it. What can you tell us about it, and what should we be thinking about when we see it and think about violence and responses to violence in urban cities, big cities?
The report can be found at igchicago.org, and just do a search for George Floyd and it'll pop up. And John's right, both press release, executive summary, and the report itself with some attached materials. And thanks for pointing to this, because this is sort of the touchstone for sort of thinking about both how we're handling Rittenhouse, but also bigger issues. The fundamental finding of the report was a lack of competency in leadership and a lack of competency in the leadership of what is has long been sort of an administratively mediocre organization. It was a failure of intelligence. It was a failure of people at the top who were themselves prepared and had trained the rank and file to be prepared for the various contingencies that you hope never happen, but you have to be prepared for. And there were lessons to be taken from Gary McCarthy's preparations for the NATO conference back in 2012. Where, again, one of those situations where we knew from past history that there is the possibility, the specter of possible civil unrest and disturbance, and you hope it doesn't happen, and you believe you can stop it from happening, but you have to be prepared for it happening. And Gary McCarthy did that. Lots and lots of the Chicago Police Department, including the leadership ranks, were trained for exactly this type of event. Did they do things that I wouldn't do? Sure. But were we prepared? You bet we were. Now, the environment is different, both in terms of the events and in terms of the social dynamics. But looking at the department's preparedness in terms of training, in terms of a chain of command for emergency situations, there was no training. There hadn't been any training for years for these sort of mass demonstration events. There was no chain of command for emergencies. Everything was seat of the pants ad hoc. And you could put that on the mayor. You could put that on David Brown. But David Brown's weeks in office, the superintendent, is weeks in office. And at some level, he's got to rely upon the leadership of the department. And Lori Lightfoot is mayor, is a relatively new mayor. And I don't say that to cut her slack. But what a mayor does need to do is to be able to rely upon expertise in the police department to sort of lay hard facts on the table, options, and make a recommendation. And then the mayor sort of acts in accordance with that. That's not what happened here. In significant respect, the mayor in some significant measure was in the command center and giving directions and those directions were not adequately informed. She doesn't necessarily know that, but they weren't adequately informed, and some really, really bad ad hoc decisions were made. And then it just sort of became reaction upon reaction upon reaction. This is a failure of leadership and competency. And the report points out really pointedly, John, this was a failure for the general public, and it was also a failure of the rank and file who were put on the front line without equipment, without clear instructions about what they were supposed to do, literally just dropped into chaotic situations with a frontline supervisor just kind of managing chaos in real time. That is not how things are done. That, what I just mentioned, competency and leadership, that is our endemic problem with the Chicago Police Department leadership right now. And we have seen the consequences over and over again. To bring it to Rittenhouse, you know, we saw over the weekend an order go out yanking everybody's regular days off or limiting regular days off that followed a directive that everyone's going to go on 12-hour shifts.
Establishing panic. Right, exactly.
Yeah, with respect to the police, you know, sort of in anticipating panic, two things came to my mind. First off, do the rank and file have any understanding about why this is happening and what it's for? Does the public have any understanding of why and what it's for? We've gotten mealy-mouthed answers, has nothing to do with Rittenhouse. That's bull. But then the other part of it is one of the fundamental failings in George Floyd was the absolute decrepit state of the intelligence unit of the police department to actually see what was happening elsewhere in the city, analyze it, and properly inform senior command of what they need to start anticipating. We don't necessarily know that there's any intel. This looks reactive to me. And if there is intel, there should be some communication about really what we're dealing with or what we're concerned about dealing with. But there's nothing. Tom Needham put out a former counsel for CBD put out a tweet yesterday saying this is crazy. And he's right, because no one knows what's going on. But at the same time, exhausted, demoralized officers are just being yanked around.
And Jeff, please, if you want to get in, I know you have questions.
Yeah, absolutely.
One last observation here, it looks to me as if it like a staple from fiction that we've seen in like space soap operas like Star Trek or any military fiction, where you have the untested, supremely politically ambitious leader thrust in a position where they have to make decisions and they micromanage to the point of chaos. How did that happen with Lightfoot?
I think that general characterization is right. And I guess I will talk about a couple of contextual factors for it. I don't buy into the notion that she should have been cut a lot of slack because she wasn't a politician and she had to learn the space.
Right.
Here's why. To me, it's about executive leadership. And executive leadership is recognizing strengths and weaknesses, including your own, surrounding yourself with really, really good people who are expert, giving them the agency to actually gather information and feed you with counsel, and then exercise good judgment. And good judgment seems to be lacking here. And the requisite expertise is just to the extent it existed early on. And a lot of those folks were untested folks as well. It absolutely doesn't exist now, especially with respect to public safety. Good folks who, if they didn't know everything they needed to know at the front end, developed institutional knowledge in that first year or two, they're all gone. All gone. And folks that hammer Lightfoot for making mistakes, I take it to one general observation I make, and I got this from Mayor Ed Koch about 7 or 8 years ago, just before he died, where he was just absolutely laid low by a major scandal, corruption scandal during his third term, kind of went into a depression. And after a few weeks of not being seen in public, was visited by the Cardinal of New York and said, Ed, what's going on? And he said, this is my legacy. This is how I'm going to be remembered. And the Cardinal told him, people in leadership, bad things are going to happen, especially in government. Where money and power come together, bad things are going to happen. Your legacy isn't that it happened on your watch. Your legacy is whether you learn from it and how you respond to it. And I'm afraid that what we're seeing is a chief executive who insistently refuses to learn and to make adjustments responsive to those lessons. That's our problem at this moment. People will forgive mistakes. But they need to see somebody who is really trying to get it right the right way. Yeah, bad things will happen, but own it and make those adjustments and say, we're going to get it right this time. And here's how. We don't see that.
No, we see petulance. We see childish behavior, stomping of the feet and screaming F and U at presidents and all the rest while she demands respect for herself.
Yeah.
And all this is disastrous in terms of leadership. It would be disastrous if it was the mother of a family or the father of a family. A family can't operate that way. And you need competent, calm management, not panic. But the things that I heard, and I'm sure you didn't put all the stuff in your report, The things that I heard when she was in the command bunker and having anxiety attacks and calling police officers and commanders left and right and demanding they do this and that. It was just horrific. It was, I mean, there was no, after I heard that stuff and then read your report, there was no question that the waves of looting wouldn't have stopped and the rest of it would continue.
Which really then leaves us all in a place, because there really isn't any transparency. There's just punchback. And she's look, I've known Lori for a long time in various contexts. What she is a counterpuncher, right? And right. So, but that's not leadership. And this isn't a courtroom. And there's not an opposing sort of legal adversary in front of you. Sometimes you got a counterpunch, but that's not leadership. The reason that all of those findings in the George Floyd context, and look, it's a horrific situation. Did anyone get it right? No. Did Chicago get it more wrong and more pervasively wrong than everybody else? Yes. Did we learn from it? We don't know, because there's no transparency. And there is sort of umbrage and grievance that anything is being questioned. And so here we are in this Rittenhouse moment, and something of significance is done in the way of sort of tactical preparation, but no one has any confidence or trust, because there's been no transparency. There's been no admission. There's been no acknowledgement of adjustments that are being made. There is no information about the whys right now. It's a bunker mentality.
And the political calculus of it is confusing, too. I mean, we're talking about a mayor who is already has zero friends, it seems, in the police department, especially in the rank and file. And the payoff here is that it looks like you're ahead of the game if something happens, even though it was misjudged by 3 days, because we still don't even have a closing arguments in this case. And she still moves forward with it. And Joe, you mentioned this, and it's so refreshing to have you on, because this is exactly what John and I have talked about for, you know, going on 2 years now. It feels that there isn't this one ability to react and readjust course, and two, the institutional knowledge that just is not there in City Hall anymore. Even though, as you pointed out, which was really interesting, Joe, and I had a little bit of microphone issue, so I couldn't jump in earlier, but the idea that, you know, was the wool pulled over our eyes, was the ultimate Chicago way that Lightfoot is part of this machine, is part of everything all along. Joe, so it's been great to talk to you. I got to ask you, though, when we're looking at this Rittenhouse situation and we're looking at back at what happened, you know, in the summer of 2020, we're not learning, are we? And when you spend all this energy and time on these reports, and then it comes back to be, well, it sounds like you're nitpicking, or you're just being angry, or you're just right. 2020.
How dare you? Dare you?
I mean, how do you feel when you spend so much time and energy on this stuff, and then it's like, oh, you're just being abrasive, or to critique us is untoward?
So that's a not unusual reaction from somebody who's on the hot seat, right? And so we should all expect that. And is it disappointing? Sure, it's disappointing. Is it surprising? No. Do I wish it were different? Yes, I do. But people should understand that IGs, and or at least IGs like the one, the Inspector General's office, like the one that I ran rather than the Park District, there's a whole world and the whole conversation in there that we have at some time. Is that we bring forward information and recommendations, and it's really up to, I'm just going to put it in broad terms, civil society to take the ball and run. And civil society here is constituted partly of officials, a legislative branch that actually reads the reports and holds hearings and demands some form of accountability. But beyond the accountability actually says to the principals, what can we do to help you? What do you need from government in order to do this better next time, right? We don't have that in Chicago. And that's another whole conversation in and of itself. But civil society also includes the media that is forever being squeezed by corporations that are, breaking up our great institutions. that sort of press everything down to sort of micro community-based reporting where the resources are constrained, people can't connect the dots, even when the dots are put on the table in front of them. And that's what politicians and their and chief executives and their massive media operations rely upon. So then they just sort of do the spurn of the moment, and their motivation is to just get past the media cycle because they know everyone's going to get distracted by the next, something else is going on somewhere else.
When you lose perspective, when you lose people that have perspective, whether it's in the police department, in law enforcement, in city government and planning, or in journalism, you get that spur of the moment, and you're down at the ground level where every shriek from every community group is treated as gospel and we must react to it. And yes, I think part of the sadness of all this is that as the city devolves with its abysmal leadership, we're going to have more of it, Joe. Jeff, do you guys think, I don't think we're going to have more violence. I mean, outside of all the homicides, murders, shootings, expressway shootings that we have. But I mean, in terms of our ability to see where we must go, I don't see anything out there, any institution providing direction.
So, a couple of things in quick reaction to that. And then I just want to just quickly circle back to a data point in George Floyd. The person who was probably the person who was responsible for the intelligence unit at the time is now the first deputy. I will. And we all, I think we, everyone who's probably going to listen to this is aware of the fact that, he promoted his wife a couple times up the chain while he's been in that position, that he's not well respected, but he was one of the pivot point failures that put the mayor, put the mayor in a really, really tough place because the department failed her. Right. He's responsible for the unit in the department that actually should have brought the information that would have made for better decisions all along and better anticipation. OK, that's the data point. As to your broader observation, John, it's we have a tendency to sort of rely upon the great figure to lead us through and make things right and make decisions. But that's not human history. And no system works well for very long if it depends upon a single individual, unchecked, and without real engagement from other portions of civil society and other portions of the government. We actually need to change the structure of our government in order to make it work better, because in the absence of that, we're going to continue to make bad decisions.
Speaking of bad decisions or not, Joe, we got you here. There's been the news that this discussion about this report on the Anjanette Young case and how it was put out. Oh. And within it, there was a recommendation that Officer Ella French, who was a great service to the city and gave her life in that service, that she was being criticized, and there was a recommendation in there, and it all blew up that it came out, and it was, people were upset on that she would be disparaged after giving her life to the city.
The report said she should be suspended. Am I correct?
3 days. Yeah.
Right.
After she died.
Yeah. Right. But the report was written in April, and Joe, my question to you is, and correct me if I'm wrong on this, is that this report was written and is kind of a protection about these reports being tampered with. It couldn't be redacted. Names couldn't be removed. It couldn't be adjusted. It had to live in its existence as it was prepared. And that is a good thing, in my opinion, because it keeps people from going back and saying, oh, well, we have a reason, so we're going to tamper with this. Am I right there, Joe? Is that the situation?
yes and no. So first off, the mayor immediately pivoted and smacked COPA and its interim chief administrator, who is applying for to be, you know, appointed by the mayor to the position full time in, by the way, a process that is proceeding completely outside the law. But it was the usual response. I'm outraged. And to have the mayor castigate another city official for being tone deaf is the height of irony. It's also the case, not just in government generally, but in Chicago specifically, in not so good ways, is exceptions can always be made. Smart people can figure out how to make the exception. And there's a whole lot of facts here that we all would benefit from before we brought a judgment. It's a fair emotional reaction. A dead officer who died in the line of duty was actually lionized by Anjanette Young for treating her with humanity and dignity, then gets dragged into this space. The report was 7 months ago. No one's asked how come it took 7 months.
Yeah.
Yep. And no one's asked, was she Ella French? Was she actually informed of the charges and the discipline before she died? Did she serve it before she died? If it was completely unknown at the point that she died, was there any conversation between the department, the mayor's office, the law department, and COPA about withdrawing that as to a deceased officer? Because you don't proceed with discipline for folks who are no longer there generally. And that opens a door to some creative thinking saying, no, we don't want things improvidently and randomly and politically sort of expunged from the public record. But exceptional circumstances warrant some creativity. But we don't even know the backdrop right now. And the mayor just simply threw it off on COPA. I am 100% confident that part of the screw up here is the people in the mayor's office for missing the fact that the normal procedure would have this report go out with Ella French's name on it. Part of the screw up is the law department that drafts the charges and is probably really the reason why this took 7 months to actually be finalized in terms of a decisional action by the superintendent. Superintendent doesn't write the charges. CPD doesn't write the charges. The law department writes the charges. And I guarantee you there was no conversation about the Ella French issue by the people who drafted the charges. And there was no consideration or sufficient consideration within CPD about how to address this sort of bad thing that was going to impact both morale and did not necessarily serve the public interest intended by the disclosure laws. There's a lot of complicity here that is implicated around fact basis that we don't have sufficiently, that the mayor is just trying to offhandedly throw off on COPA. And so, before we hammer COPA, and look, COPA's part of the call here. And you could say, look, we have no discretion, but I also know that COPA does things at times where it sure is some creative discretion that's going on there. So I call BS on the notion that there is nothing that could have been done here. And I call BS on the notion that it's actually just COPA that's responsible for this.
Joe, what you're talking about is not only an indictment of the government, but also of media. And I want to give the reporters on the street a break here. I've been critical of some, but just like law enforcement, the blue shirts require command. They require command that they respect and that thinks for them and thinks ahead of things, thinks out these things you're talking about. I'm astounded after hearing this. Where are the editors in all this? Where are the station, the news, the general managers of the news stations? Is it just that everybody is just content with Lori treating the city like it's a Twitter verse, like the city itself is Twitter?
As you well know, you and Jeff well know as much as anyone else, there's sort of two things that sort of drive media. One is getting it right, and the other is getting it first. And getting it first sometimes prevents getting it right in the first generation of the narrative, right? Mm-hmm. And you then got to follow up. The other thing I would say, and that's what I think happened here, is just like, here it is, COPPA went. The other thing implicated is, you know, the media, the editors, you only know what you know about the system and what's behind the system, right? And we have created an extraordinarily complex Byzantine system around.
Well, here we go against going after the Greeks again. There,
no,
Byzantine. That construction comes from the English of the 19th century, and what we can have another long discussion on that.
But it's. And this is where the imperative to sort of stay on top of what's happening in real time sort of prevents and diminishes the investment of resources in people who actually gather the longer institutional knowledge. So when a story breaks, we actually understand the context within which it's occurring. So I don't blame the media for the first generation of story, but you'd like to see the second generation that gives the bigger picture. And I don't know that the impetus is there sufficiently in the mainstream media to actually do that follow-up.
One thing Jeff brought up, and maybe Jeff wants to talk about it, the map that's coming up in the context of what we're talking about.
Yeah, it's it's a hot topic for me. I'm always intrigued by this stuff, but you know, Chicago is due for new ward maps, and one of the things we've kind of run into is that the Black Caucus says, no way we're giving up a ward because, you know, hey, we're here. We're at the table. We're not giving up our seat, which you understand. Latino Caucus says, hey, we deserve more. We're a growing audience. And then you have an Asian ward that should be drawn out and given representation. And it's this process that's so backdoor, smoky room kind of, or backroom rather, smoky room kind of mentality to it. And so I always would love to get your take on the process as you see it, because to me, I'm sure the only person who's not getting screwed is the person who's in the room.
I couldn't say that more pointedly and better, Jeff. this is the contemporary no smoking version of the smoke filled back rooms. People don't smoke cigars anymore in those rooms, but it's the same thing that's going on. We should not have let's all reduce this to a point of sort of ethics and morality, if you will. Everybody who's in the room has a conflict of interest.
Correct.
In terms of actually doing something that best serves the greater public interest and good. And there, and by which I mean to say, that's not how the process should be. You should be starting out, and this is done in Chicago's like, you can't do that. We've never done it that way. Fact of the matter is, the rest of the country, lots of the rest of the country does it where there are sort of different computer models of how to draw the map, and you have contiguous districts, not like bizarre stuff that we create. And then people can argue at the margin a little bit about here and there, you know, this block, that street, this line, but that's at the margin. That's not how we do things here. We start with what's in it for me and how do I preserve mine and how do I screw somebody that I don't like and how do I make sure I don't get screwed? That's not how you draw a map.
I don't see any other way to draw a map. It's because you have to consider personal interest. And everyone's favorite subject is themselves. And this is whether you look at it on the federal level, the state level, the local level, it's all the same. People will bend and fold and spindle or whatever, manipulate the law to serve their interests, which is why we have major corporations regulating the hell out of using the Congress and the federal bureaucracy to regulate the hell out of their competitors. But it's it's human nature.
It is human nature, which is why the systems and the standards and the mechanisms become really, really important. And I'm going to raise something that I know has sort of been floated to you along the way in the past, and I'd love to come back and talk to you about it sometime. But here in Chicago, part of the reason it's a free-for-all when it's not a food fight is that Chicago doesn't have the equivalent of a constitution.
Right.
There's no higher law that says, no, these are the standards and this is how things have to go. And so we make it up as we go along. And people say, well, we got the municipal code and there's law and so on and so forth. You know, I point people to look at how Eddie Johnson got appointed superintendent. There was a prescribed process under the law in which there's a national search done by the police board, and they vet these candidates, and the mayor has to select from finalists that are provided by the police board. Rahm didn't like who was sent to him. Lori Lightfoot was the person sending it. So what did he do? He got a law passed in the city council that says, we're going to suspend the law, and I'm going to appoint who I want to appoint, right? Mm-hmm. That can't happen if there's a higher order of law, a constitution that can only be changed by referendum, right? And so a lot of Chicago structurally is messed up because the people in power just make adjustments at the margin, sometimes legal, sometimes not legal. But they're just constantly tweaking things to their own increasing benefit because there is no higher set of standards or mechanisms that they can't tamper with that would safeguard against the very tendencies of human nature, John, that you're referencing.
Like, say, a mayor just deciding to lock everyone in their homes, regardless of what they, because, you know, I'll lock you in your home. I'm going to get my hair done, but I'm locking you in your home.
I'm not going to go there, but I hear what you're saying.
Another thing that's happening lately is that many of my colleagues are running up to Arne Duncan, the White Shadow. If you watch television in the 70s, as I did, the White Shadow was one of my favorite shows. It was about a Bulls basketball player who was injured and became a coach of an inner city basketball team. And now that White Shadow is Arne Duncan, who was Barack Obama's White Shadow and who would pass and block out and play defense for Barack's pickup games. He was the Secretary of Education, very teacher-friendly, teacher-union-friendly, former CPS, very teacher-union-friendly, and now is being positioned to run for mayor. He is asked by reporters, are you interested? And he's like, I'm not even thinking about that. And that is allowed to fall with the thud without anybody pushing. I see him as being positioned for mayor, and I don't know whether I like that or not. What do you think? You see it, or am I, you know, just Mr. Tinfoil Hat, Cass and Carlin with their tinfoil hats on, looking at politics?
Well, you got to look at it from that lens at some level because of the history of how both the city and the state work. So it's right. It's not ridiculous to pose the question. I think it may be a bit much to insist upon an answer at this juncture. And, you know, some of the follow up questions that would go to Arne would be, OK, you are not thinking about it. Are people approaching you to try to get you to think about it?
Yeah, like the Pritzkers, Rahm, Barack, David Axelrod, Cunningham, and the rest of them.
Yeah. And on that score, it's just like, you know what? Frankly, I'm a little bit wary about sort of speaking in sort of overt political terms still, because there's still some IG echoing business. But I am gonna say something that may run against some of your sort of party inclinations. But I feel at some level the city is exhausted in the same way the country was exhausted by the end of the Trump term. And there are some similarities in personality between our mayor and our former president. And Chicago is exhausted. We are exhausted by not having sort of sane, stable leadership, right? And so from that perspective, I know you don't love Joe Biden, but the fact of the matter is Joe Biden's just a grown-up, all right?
Well, I wanted the Joe Biden he said he was, not the
yeah.
Joe
well, Biden. No, okay, but that's policies and direction and orientation. But as a matter of sort of leadership qualities, the fact of the matter is he's just a grown up, and there's a whole level of PTSD triggers that are gone because we have a grown up at least in the White House, and we can argue about things. We need a grown up in the city. That's where we are right now. And so I say all that because for all that we want, you might surmise about Arnie, he's a grown-up, all right? That alone sort of says, well, you know, maybe that's somebody we should be looking at. But I will say this, in this city, and part of this is IG training, you don't draw conclusions ahead of time. But because this is Chicago and in Chicago's in Illinois, you got to work from a verify but trust, verify then trust perspective rather than trust but and then verify. And if Arnie is just thinking about running and deciding to run, I think, you know, what we should all be demanding is that he do the equivalent of open the books on this organization that he's been running so that we can see that, you know, something that I think he is completely devoted to and actually is serious about, that it actually holds together.
The cred thing? Yeah.
The cred thing. And it holds together not simply because he has more money sort of per population that he serves than anybody else out there, but because the model works, right? Make sure that the books get opened on that thing before we draw a judgment. And let that be the basis of our judgment about what he's all about. But right now, I look at him and say, you know what? The White Shadow thing I get. I watched The White Shadow. What was the guy's name? Ken something or other, the actor?
Yeah. Ken Griffin or something? No, not Ken.
No.
He's running for, he's going to topple Governor Big Boy.
But look, you got to give Arnie credit for actually going into the community and caring about the community and trying to do something in the community. But whether it all holds together is really what we should be asking about. But let's wait and see what he says. Well, but you're right. He is somebody who is arguably positioned to make a run.
Ken Howard, thank you. I don't want anyone to make a mistake. You're not, but maybe you are, but I don't think you are. You're not endorsing Arnie Duncan for...
No, me. I'm not drawing any conclusions. And that's right. My point is, we don't have enough information about anything, including what's in Arnie's head and heart at the moment. All I'm saying is everyone should reserve judgment. I don't like a scenario, John, in which we beat the crap out of people before they've even made a decision to run. Because you know what that results in? Nobody running.
Just as I don't like what we did the last time, which was to elevate and canonize someone before we know who she really is. And now we do, unfortunately, and that's Lori Lightfoot.
Yeah, full circle. Right.
So let's not canonize Arnie, but let's not vilify him either, and let's sort of reserve judgment.
All right. I'll play a game of horse with him. As long as I can have a scotch and soda and a smoke while I'm doing it. Joe Ferguson, thanks for being here on the Chicago Way. We really appreciate it and hope you can come back again.
Yeah, Joe.
When the next question will be, what about Joe Ferguson running for mayor?
Oh, geez. I hear my mother calling. Guys, this was fun. I hope to jump on again sometime.
Thanks. All right. Thank you.
Thanks, Joe. A lot.
Bye.
Yeah, that was Joe Ferguson. We were both taken in by Lori Lightfoot. We both now have seen the other side of her face. We see a future of Chicago that is, well, it's got to change. For Joe Ferguson, former Inspector General of Chicago, who's got some reports still dangling out there. Maybe we'll talk about them another time. And for Jeff Carlin, executive producer at WGN Radio, my friend, lover of cats, baker of pies, not for me, but others. And if you want to advertise on this program, because we are going to sell advertising, reach out to Jeff Carlin. You can find him on Twitter at JP Carlin. And for me, John Cass, husband, father, columnist at johncassnews.com. Thanks for being here for another edition of that Boulevard of Broken Dreams, the Chicago Way on WGN Plus.